To know that human beings have ascended to a level of technology that is new, one has only to look at our beautiful city skylines. Representations of our technological might and our economic majesty, perfectly built to exacting specifications. Just kidding. A lot of them are rickety shit factories that fall apart. This is a bunch of architectural fails tonight on Deep Fat Fried.
Deep Fat Fried!
How can you fucking say this, Paul? You attack our country.
It's true.
You want to tear down these buildings, Paul? I remember a group of men who went to one of our major cities and they destroyed some buildings, Paul. You know what they were? The 9/11 hijackers, Paul.
You seem side to with know them. Who they are.
You side with the 9/11 hijackers, Paul?
You seem to know a lot about them.
I do. I know a lot because I studied extensively the enemies of America.
Al Qaeda training camps? Yeah, you studied extensively the jihad. I know.
I might have infiltrated some fucking camps or something, you know?
Yeah, tell us more. Tell us more about what you know about these jihadi training camps.
A lot of it I've been sworn to secrecy, you know, by the U.S. government stuff.
You know? Scotty, can you hook him up to a waterboard, please? I think we're going to have to waterboard TJ.
I mean,
he clearly has some fucking national security information that we don't know.
Mm. Yeah, this episode, you answer a few questions for us. Don't worry about it. This is enhanced interrogation techniques.
Look at this building. You mean to tell me this impressive looking fucking
It looks
structure?
Like it's standing, Paul. Look at that.
Is it crumbling to the ground? Is it falling apart? No.
No, it isn't.
It's a beautiful, gorgeous skyscraper.
Not currently, at least. This is the Aon Tower in Chicago. Currently, it's fourth tallest building. It opened as the Standard Oil Building in 1974. And then in 85, it was renamed the Amoco Tower. 99, it became the Aon Center. On completion, the tower was a feast for the eyes. The building's designers chose to clad the entire external facade in Italian Carrara marble, TJ. Not just any marble.
Carrara.
Italian Carrara marble.
And you got a problem with this building, Paul?
I do.
It's a beautiful building. I mean, look, they literally...
Gorgeous structure.
I mean, it's built out of a fucking facade of marble, Paul. This is like something you'd see like in ancient Rome or something. You got a problem with this building?
It's exactly something you would see in ancient Rome because this exact marble is from the region in which all the marble for the Roman Empire was quarried. Carrara marble, Scotty. So this is basically an ancient Roman statue made into a building.
Wow. But of course, Paul's going to attack it.
You'd think that a material with such a lengthy history and architecture would be ideal, but Chicago's climate is much different than the Mediterranean climate of Italy. This climate discrepancy would be this building's costly downfall. Carrara marble is much thinner than regular cladding materials. That's the stuff you put on the outside of a building. And before the building was even completed, one slab detached. This was on December 25th, 1973, during construction. So not a tiny little piece either. 350-pound marble slab. So basically like a TJ detached from the side of the building.
Look, you know, mistakes are going to happen, okay?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you're building a building. You know, sometimes a marble slab is going to fall off and crush some people. But,
I mean, it didn't even crush anybody. I mean, it's probably fine.
I mean, they covered it up, but, you know.
It was after exposure to Chicago's large temperature swings that the facade began to deteriorate to dangerous levels. The changes in temperature, they get really cold in the winter and then pretty warm in the summer. It's made these thin marble slabs start to bow outward, which made them permanently deformed and lose all of their strength stacked one upon the other. To alleviate this problem, stainless steel straps were added to hold the marble in place after a worrying inspection report in 1985 found numerous cracks. This thing was just basically ready to rain death upon the local neighborhood at any second.
I mean, you know, let's be honest what really happened here. I mean, the marble was fine. It's strong marble. The strongest marble was used. It's really just improperly insulation. Let's be honest here. If they didn't install it properly, if they had done it right.
I'll tell you my theory. A lot of these,
if they had done it right, it'd be fine.
A lot of these Chicago criminals were out there shooting at the marble, you know.
I'll try to chip some of the marble away to sell
it. Trying to fucking make it, you know, fall apart.
That sounds plausible. There's a lot of criminals
in Chicago, you know what I mean?
Of course, putting this big steel superstructure over the building was a temporary solution. Eventually, the strain of Chicago weather proved too much even for that. And every single marble cladding piece of the 83-story building had to be replaced. So it took 44,000 pieces of 2-inch thick granite. Estimated cost back in 1985 when this took place was $80 million. I don't know what that is in today money, but I'm guessing it's like something like $200 million or something like that. They had to resurface the entire building. Amoco was reluctant to divulge the actual amount, but it's well over half the original price of the building without adjustment for inflation.
Ugh.
So you basically have built another half of these for the cost that it took for them to strip all that marble down and replace it with granite. What did they do with the thousands of tons of marble they removed? Because they were cut in such a specialized way, there wasn't much they could do with it at all. The vast majority of the discarded marble was crushed and used as landscaping decoration.
That's $270 million by today's standards, by the way.
Jesus. Another 1,000 tons of the marble headed to the Governor State University, where the stone was crushed and used for decorative granite. Once again, landscaping cover.
Yeah, landscaping. So basically,
they tore all this expensive ass fucking Italian marble down, crushed it up, and put it in gardens and shit as landscaping. Yeah,
that's funny.
So yeah, 500 tons, I guess, were donated to the Illinois Department of Rehabilitation contractor to employ the disabled to carve little corporate gifts. I guess they gave some of it to retarded people. Oh man, they took a
bath on that one. Oh. Yeah, give it to some criminals. I could chip some out of. I don't fucking know.
On May 14th, 2018, the Aon Center's owners unveiled an $185 million proposal for an observatory featuring a thrill ride on the roof called the Sky Summit, which would be the world's tallest exterior elevator, giving riders a clear view of being rocketed up 1,000 feet in 60 seconds. Another component of the observatory is an observation tube picture that would dangle people over the edge of the building, with Chicago below their feet. The observatory was supposed to be completed in 2022, but COVID-19. I don't think I would ride this on this building.
I don't want that.
Fuck that. Look, shit. We had another project that had some errors. Like, yeah, I don't want to be shot up 1,000 feet in 60 seconds and find out all the fail safes were built like the same people that
from fucking the building that brought you marble slabs raining down on your head. Yeah. Comes the new thrill ride attraction of these.
No. Thanks. Sorry. No, thank you.
Yeah, not on this building. You know, maybe on an I would do this on another building. I very rarely have run across a ride I won't take. You know what I mean? But this one, I'd probably pass on this one.
There's some building in L.A. It's like a slide, isn't there? I can't remember which one it is, but it's like you slide and it's like super high up.
There's an external roller coaster in Vegas that's crazy.
Oh, yeah. The Stratosphere.
That's pretty nutty. So let's talk about Frank Gehry for a second. And I want to make it clear. I actually like this dude's architecture. I'm not here to poop on Frank Gehry, but he's definitely a dude that prioritizes his artistic vision over practicality in almost every conceivable way. He's a Canadian. I know we've all been to this building. Yeah, definitely more about the look than it is the function. A number of his buildings include the Experience Music Project in Seattle, which is pictured here. These have become the world-renowned places for people to go. So obviously, you know, we're not going to shit on the guy. He's considered by one of the most to be one of the most influential architects of the late 20th century, as well as the most ridiculed by traditional architects. He enrolled at Harvard's Graduate School of Design to study urban planning, but dropped out soon after, moved to LA, where he established his own firm. So he came to national attention with his Easy Edges furniture line in the 1970s. These were made of corrugated cardboard and filter board, so they were very cheap and kind of like iconic to have a piece of this in your house back in the 70s, I guess.
70s were a wacky time. Dude,
like the Pet Rock, shit like this. Like, here's some cardboard, but it's in an interesting shape. Like, yeah, I'll pay for that. Yeah.
You could sit on this. It was corrugated cardboard, so you could plop your... Well, maybe I couldn't, but Scotty could definitely sit on this.
I'll say, Paul, if you jumped on this, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. TJ, you jump on this, I don't know what's going to happen.
It's going to just go.
Gary's office was one of the first to employ the computer as a tool for designing blueprints to liberate the imagination and ensure that the unbuildable project was faithfully executed on time and on budget. However, faithful execution and competent execution are two different things. This is one of Frank Gehry's projects, probably one of his more controversial projects. This is the Ray and Maria Stata Center, which opened in 2004. This houses MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Labs, Department of Linguistics and Philosophy, the Laboratory of Information and Decision Systems. It's a big area for people that are on the MIT campus. Like, you probably got several classes in here if you're going to MIT.
It looks like German expressionism, dude. Like, that's, well, I literally thought like something was wrong with the building for a second. It's like, did this model crumble or something? Or what is this?
Yeah, it looks like cubism or something, dude.
Well, it was celebrated for its bold, angular design that was said to challenge the laws of physics. MIT filed a negligence suit.
Challenge them, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
MIT filed a negligence suit against Gehry 3 years after the center opened, claiming design flaws in the $300 million building caused major structural problems.
Issues with drainage. When you challenge the laws of physics, I mean, I'm sorry, but they usually are going to fucking
also
win.
It's MIT. If you fuck up the engineering of a building, I don't know if there's a worse group of people to fucking fuck over with like the building and engineering standards of something. Like, they're going to figure it out pretty quick.
Yeah. So this thing, apparently drainage was an issue. So water would pool and crack the exteriors of the building because it was all weird angular. Apparently, like in the winter, these giant like Knight's Lance sized fucking icicles would form on the sides of this. Oh my
God, it's like a death trap nightmare that doesn't drain. Oh, God. And it's MIT, too. So what an embarrassment.
All the little nooks and crannies of it allowed molds to grow on the exterior walls because there was all this damp, like dark area for all this mold to grow. So apparently they forgot things like gutters are more important than the complex looking cool. Repairs and alteration work cost the school more than $1.5 million on a $300 million building to get this thing to even, you know, be safe for people to be around, I guess.
Well, you know, that is.
What the fuck, dude?
But whatever, I mean, they got a cool, you know, computer science building out of the deal.
I mean, look at it. It looks neat.
It does.
I mean, it does, but when you throw...
Maybe it's impractical and moldy and fucking there's, you know, giant icicles flying in your head
and
stuff.
This is a case of like people being wowed by a design, but even that, even probably, you know, while being really smart and intelligent, I mean, it's fucking... It's a technology institute. It's a place for people that like are geniuses and shit. Like Goodwill Hunting shit is going on here. And it's like, but yet no one fucking figured out the design was going to be like, wait a minute. There's no way there's anything to drain. There's giant icicles that are going to kill people.
Even the construction company that did this named Skanska USA Building. This is Frank Gehry, by the way.
I like this guy.
Yeah.
Like, fuck yes. This guy rocks.
So the construction company came out and said that they warned this guy a bunch of times, like, this isn't going to work. This is going to cause problems, blah, blah, blah. Frank Gehry apparently didn't give a fuck. They were told to just proceed with the original design as he gave it to him. The company spokesman went on to say it was difficult to make the original design work. In a 2007 interview, Gehry, whose firm had been paid $15 million for the project, said construction problems were inevitable in the design of complex buildings. He said, these things are complicated and they involved a lot of people and you never know quite where they went wrong. A building goes together with 7 billion pieces of connective tissue. The chances of it getting done ever without something colliding or some misstep is small. The lawsuit was reportedly settled in 2010 with most of the issues having been resolved. So, you know, whatever.
Let me just say something about this dude right here.
Yeah.
This guy, I don't know if he's an American. I guess maybe he is. I don't know. But he's the greatest greatest architect of all time. He doesn't give a fuck about none of this nonsense. All these architects all hung up on, does the pipes work? Does this work? Does that work? Fuck all that shit. What matters is you created some crazy Dr. Seuss shit in real life and you got paid millions of dollars to get it. So
does it look cool? That's the question, right?
That's the only question. Like, and if you go to the MoPop, dude. MoPop looks like a fucking unique building.
Like, is it safe? Is all this? These are all secondary questions.
I mean, look.
Is it safe? Does it make sense? Blah, blah, blah.
TJ, you're someone.
The top question is, does it look bad ass?
TJ, you don't even care about safety. You've done, you said several times on the show that like you're like, fuck the safety shit.
And I'm saying it again now. So if you can give me a choice between a cool looking building
that's totally unsafe
or a safe looking building, I'll take the cool looking building. Well,
A thing, TJ, where like you're 10 stories up, dude, and you just walk out and you just fall to your death.
That's beautiful. I mean, does it look good?
It looks cool.
TJ is going to get lanced with an icicle off of some crazy fucking building one of these days.
And that will also look pretty cool.
Yeah.
It has a cool way to go. Frank Geary has also made the possibly fatal mistake of kind of screwing over the mouse himself.
Oh, no.
He went on to produce a few other potentially lethal buildings. The Walt Disney Concert Hall is an ambitious building by design. It comes at a cost. Upon completion in 2003, the project cost an estimated $274 million. The parking garage alone is $110 million. The 2003 grand opening of the Disney Concert Hall was filled with pomp and circumstance, lavish even for Southern California standards. Celebrities from everywhere. They all came to the red carpet and to be taken. You know, it's a very striking building if you've ever seen it. It took the project more than 15 years to be completed. It's very shiny, has lots of cool, elegant curves and polished metal. But there were some problems. Soon after completion of the hall, many people noticed concentrated heat spots, especially as the sun's rays intensified above the October opening day. Unconfirmed reports of bystanders roasting hot dogs in the reflected heat quickly became legendary. Blinding glare affected drivers that were passing the building. Nearby residential buildings noticed an increased use and cost for air conditioning, so it made everything around it hotter as it reflected sun everywhere. LA County contracted with environmental experts to study the problems and the complaints seemingly caused by the new building. Using computer models and sensor equipment, officials determined that specific highly polished panels of stainless steel on certain curved areas of the complex were the source of all of the controversial glare and the heat. So it was basically acting like a big magnifying glass.
Right. Great.
Like a big giant modern art magnifying glass that was taking the sun and turning it into a bunch of like weird fractal lasers that were hitting certain buildings and heating them up and blinding people.
You cook a hot dog though, guys. I mean, that's kind of nice. You're out on the street. You're like, yeah, I'll put it right there. Okay. Great. Just got to bring a bun, dude. That's all you need.
Eventually they had to hire people to come in and like brush, like wire brush these to make them less reflective at a huge cost that was never fully revealed. But now it's, I guess, safe to have this building, but it's not anywhere near as striking because it's not mirror polished anymore. So there you go.
This architect's a genius, dude. He makes like these crazy buildings with these weird unexpected design flaws and he gets rich doing it.
Yeah,
they look cool as fuck, but you gotta kind of know, if you hire this guy, you're gonna have problems.
Yeah, it just kind of shows you that sometimes maybe go with practicality when you're building a big ass building. I don't know how cool it has to look, you know, necessarily. No, it's gonna
look cool. Well, let me tell you something. It has to look really fucking cool.
The cooler the building looks, the better it is.
This building is so cool, like a Pop-Tart. It's so cool, it's hot. You know what I mean?
So up until now, we've talked about architectural failures that were just inconvenient and costly to the city. These architectural failures that we're going to cover now were just deadly, as well as costly. On April 27, 1978, the catastrophic collapse of an under construction cooling tower killed 51 workers at Pleasants Power Station at Willow Island, West Virginia. The incident is best described by the Charleston Gazette journalist Ken Ward, who said the cable hoisting that bucket of concrete went slack. The crane that was pulling it up fell toward the inside of the tower. Scaffolding followed. The previous day's concrete lift 28 started to collapse. Concrete began to unwrap off the top of the tower. First, it peeled counterclockwise and then in both directions. A mess of concrete, wooden forms, and metal scaffolding crumbled to the ground. 51 construction workers were on the scaffold at the time, and they all plunged to their deaths.
Oh, my God, dude. Yeah.
So apparently this still wet, still setting up concrete, something happened, and it started a chain reaction, and it all just started to like unwrap from the sides of the building, and it all collapsed. So pretty crazy.
Having that many people in the scaffolding at that time too. I mean, that's 51 people dying. Like, that's crazy. That's very rare that you'll have hear any accident costing 51 lives.
Yeah, well, it's pretty hard to survive a fall from, I'm sure it was a pretty significant.
Yeah, height. I mean, yeah, of course, but
especially if there's like building tumbling with you.
Building materials falling along a
crane.
With
So as common as is common with tragedies like this, a number of factors rather than just one led to the event. Time seemed to be the biggest cause of the mistakes here. Everyone was rushing. Cement wasn't given enough time to set. Contractors were all cutting corners. Combination of time pressure and lack of oversight basically caused these 51 people to die. The eventual penalty demanded by OSHA, which is, the United States federal kind of, I don't know what the acronym stands for, but they oversee workplace safety. The initial penalty demanded by that company was, or that arm of the government was an insulting $1,700 per worker.
And, Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
That's a joke, dude. The people that did this or responsible for this should be in prison.
And while the possibility of criminal charges was investigated, none were ever filed. Blame the worker tactics abounded in this situation.
Were the culprits rich? Oh, okay. No charges.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So the company basically engaged in a campaign to discredit the workers that had built this and OSHA. Granted, all this happened a long time ago, but it serves as a warning as to how difficult it can be to get employees to own or employers to own up to their mistakes. None of these construction guys wanted to work as fast as they were working and not let the shit set up. So they were definitely kind of ordered to their own deaths. So 7 years after the Willow Island disaster,
at least there was recompense, you know.
Yeah, of course. So 7 years after that disaster, when OSHA proposed rules to protect workers during poured concrete construction projects like the one we just learned about, but it took another disaster in Bridgeport, Connecticut, before they really moved to finalize any of these rules. The L'Ambiance Plaza disaster on April 23rd, 1987 occurred 4 days short of the 10-year anniversary of the Willow Island disaster. The final OSHA rule was on concrete and masonry construction was issued in June 1988 and improved scaffolding rules not until 1990. The L'Ambiance Plaza collapse was one of the worst disasters in modern history, definitely in Connecticut history. It was a 16-story residential project under construction in Bridgeport, Connecticut, at the corner of Washington Avenue and Coleman Street. It's partially erect frame completely collapsed on April 23rd, 1987, killing 28 construction workers. Failure was possibly due to high concrete stress on the floor slabs by the placement process that resulted in cracking, ending in a type of punch through failure, just like the one before, where something falls through, starts a chain reaction, and then.
I mean, this is just cataclysmically violent event, you know, like. Insane, like, you know, just like the amount of weight being thrown around in a fucking building collapse like that, you know, and, you know, human beings are fragile fucking creatures compared to massive slabs of concrete weighing multiple tons.
You have no chance
being smashed around and fucking shit. I mean, it's just fucking, you're basically squashed like a little bug. You're a fucking mosquito and bam.
You're just flattened by this.
You're just fucking devastated. Your body is fucking obliterated. You know, it's fucking hideous shit.
So it took two of these basically identical accidents to prompt a nationwide investigation.
Yeah, surprised it even happened fucking then. No, in America.
Connecticut, after this happened, temporarily banned the use of this type of construction statewide until the investigation was finished, and it led to new rules. And, well, you haven't heard about one of these in a long time for a reason here in America.
That's good. I mean,
they don't happen
at least
anymore.
Didn't do that fucking shit.
So I thought we'd
about buildings collapsing and stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, one happened in New Orleans pretty recently, so
that wasn't too long ago.
Remember that body that was stuck up there for like months and they couldn't get to it? They just had like a tarp over it.
It was a disgrace.
Did they ever get that fucking shit?
They got his body eventually.
Yeah, eventually. But he was up there for months.
That was crazy.
Like visible from the street. You could just like see him hanging out.
There's nothing you could do, though. I mean, it's too dangerous to even go near it. So,
you know, they could have done. They actually inspected the building properly. That's what they could have done.
Well, I'm just saying, once it was collapsed, you know.
Well, yeah, at that point, after they fucked it up so badly, yeah.
Remember when they tried to blow it up to fix it?
Oh, my God.
It didn't work, and then the shit just, like, was dangling there, and it's like.
Yeah, it just made it worse.
Oh, anyway.
Yeah, I thought we'd finish our episode today with a more recent architectural nightmare, which as of the recording of this episode is still being actively litigated. Mm-hmm. Here's one of those expensive addresses in the world. You ready? Mm-hmm. 432 Park Avenue. That's the tallest building in this structure. As you can imagine, a very exclusive and desirable address with a super tall tower that kind of dwarfs anything in the area. And huge views of the park from most of its units, if not all of them. You know, this is an upscale building in New York for sure. Oh, yeah. When the skyscraper was completed in 2015, it was the envy of Billionaires Row. It was the tallest residential building in the Western Hemisphere. Some critics compared Raphael Vinaloy's 125-unit tower to a middle finger jutting up above the Midtown skyline. But it still had a projected sellout value of $3.1 billion once all was told and all the units were sold. While many occupants purchased properties anonymously through shell companies, known buyers included J-Lo and her then, I think, husband Alex Rodriguez, who purchased a 4,000-square-foot apartment at 432 Park in 2018 for $15.3 million.
Paltry, yeah.
Jeez. So the nearly 1,400-foot-tall pencil skyscraper first came under scrutiny in February 2021 after a New York Times report of grievances from the building's wealthy residents.
Oh!
In a legal complaint filed in September 2021, the condo board at 432 Park Avenue alleges the 96-floor skyscraper overlooking Central Park is riddled with more than 1,500 construction and design defects in the common areas alone, many of which are described as life safety issues. These defects are so severe, per the complaint, that some residents have been completely displaced from their units for periods in excess of 19 months, while the sponsor half-heartedly
poor attempts, millionaires and billionaires, man.
Yeah. God. How dare they?
God bless them.
Oh, God, no.
The condo board for the tower. Justice.
Swift. Decisive.
The condo board for the tower in question is suing the developers for $125 million in damages, citing floods, faulty elevators, intolerable noise caused by the building swaying in the wind.
Oof. I would not want that.
I guess recently in June, there was an electrical explosion there. It was the second in 3 years that knocked out the power to the residents for a long ass time.
Man, there's one thing I know is, and we all pretty much know this about America. You can fuck with anybody, but don't fuck with the rich.
These motherfuckers, they got finessed. It just goes to show you that even these fucking billionaires get finessed. This somebody fucking probably bought this hugely expensive plot of land on a loan, cut every corner they could, and built a 125-unit luxury skyscraper that they knew was going to sucker all these whales who wanted to be able to brag about their fucking park view and shit. And he sold him a shitbox fucking place that's probably more like what people that pay like a hundredth of their rent have to deal with in their slum ass fucking shit. You know what I mean? They just got finessed.
It's so tall.
And then it's making a bunch of noise because it's literally swaying in the wind like.
What's that? Oh, power's out again. Another electrical explosion. Another
electrical explosion, damn it. Fuck, the elevator's out again. God damn it.
I mean, it is worth mentioning, like, the next picture, TJ, is the view that you get from one of these on the upper level, and you got to imagine they're complaining.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is the
view. What it's all about.
This is a view from a living room window on one of the upper level condos in this place. And
horrible, miserable view. Terrible.
Yeah. And these are some of the richest of the rich people that own in this building, by the way. Anybody that purchases their property and lives in it through a shell corporation is probably a pretty fucking wealthy individual. Although I have considered maybe doing something similar if I ever buy a house too.
Yeah.
Makes it harder to find, you know, where you are and shit, I guess.
Shell corporation.
Perhaps there's a little bit of karmic justice to this predicament. How many of these wealthy residents padded their pockets with investments into like shitbox apartments run by slummy property managers and shitty landlords? Probably a lot of them.
Oh, God.
In one way or another, probably all of them. If you connect the dots. How many own businesses that mistreat and underpay their employees? Considering this is an active lawsuit, there's another side of the story as well. And to be fair, I'll provide that. The sponsors contend that the condo board has vastly exaggerated the number of issues in its lawsuit, and that most of the issues were normal post-construction work to harmonize all of the building's complex systems and correct issues that are only observed once the building is operational. According to court records, the response claims that in the limited number of design and construction issues that had merit, the residents obstructed their ability to make repairs. You can decide who you believe, the rich fucks or the shitty slum landlords, I guess.
Yeah.
I really don't care.
Fuck them both, dude. I'm not. Yeah, it's like that skyscraper in San Francisco that's sinking. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm real sad about it.
Oh,
poor rich fuck.
So yeah, that's some pretty amazing architectural design failures there. I like this last one. This last one makes me smile because really
the last one's beautiful.
I hope this thing just sinks into its own footprint and just goes.
Yeah,
down.
The other ones are tragic. This one is like it's a bunch of rich fucks, so we all know they don't have to live there, and their little bullshit grievances and issues. It's like, yeah, you know what? Those people normally
never. Poor J-Lo, though.
We need to get the construction company and the management company and all the residents together in this building for a meeting and then demolish it. And that would really yeah. solve the problem.
A lot of problems would be solved in the world suddenly. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe it turns out it's like a rocket ship and we just blast it off into the sun. You know,
that's too good for them.
A one-way ticket to the sun, guys. Get a hell of a view.
It's going to be beautiful.
You think the view of right now they have of Central Park is great.
About the view when you're flying towards the fucking sun. You know
what I mean? It's getting hot.
2022 will be the year that we literally drown you in content. 156 standard 30-minute episodes of Deep Fat Fried. 52 long-form episodes of Deep Fat Fried. 37 episodes of Dank D&D. Live episodes of Onion Nuggets every Wednesday. New Cinema for Cynics reviews. Fighting Boys, Abandoned Hope, Hideology, Ask Hollywood Love, and The Grease Trap. And even if you manage to watch it all, we still have a massive back catalog of old content that's going to blow your mind. We have got metric tons of old commentaries, grease traps, mountains of Deep Fat Fried episodes. We've got oceans of Flash Fries. We got valleys of Abandoned Hope and Hideology and other miscellaneous content you could watch for weeks, if not months, straight. And with all this content, both new and old, we have realized that it is time to simplify our Patreon. Yes! Right now, our Patreon is split into a $10 tier and a $5 tier. Now, this has long aggrieved us because our philosophy in this company is that simplicity is best. How do we create so much content? We keep it simple. We keep it streamlined. We commit to a process and we constantly fine-tune that process. Anything that wastes time, we get rid of. Having two patron tiers is not in line with our philosophy. So, we've decided to unify into a single tier at the price point of $7. Join the Pessimist Productions Patreon today because we are looking very forward to entertaining you all in 2022.
Deep Fat Fried. Deep Fat Fried. Deep